WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Laura Linney isn't a flashy actress. Maybe that's why it took a while for her to achieve the recognition she deserves. But this year, she received an Oscar nomination for her leading role in You Can Count on Me. Earlier, she co-starred with Clint Eastwood in Absolute Power, with Jim Carrey in The Truman Show, and with Richard Gere and Edward Norton in Primal Fear. Now she's returning to a role she originated 8 years ago in the series Tales of the City, the TV adaptation of Armistead Maupin's stories about the loves and adventures of a group of gay and straight friends in San Francisco in the mid-70s who form a kind of family with each other. The third cycle, Further Tales of the City, premieres on Showtime Sunday night. In Further Tales, the year is 1981. Linney's character, Marianne Singleton, has a job on a local TV station hosting the afternoon movie called The Bargain Matinee, for which she has to wear an usherette uniform and say inane things. In this scene, she tells her boss that she wants to move to the evening news.
Larry?
All right, you want to have a little talk. I think we can do that here just to save us both the time.
Well, it would only take...
The truth is, Marianne, you're a daytime face. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but the public doesn't want to see a daytime face on the 6 o'clock news. It's just that simple. I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
What about Bambi Kanataka?
What about her?
Well, she had a daytime show, and then you let her do it.
Bambi's GSRs went through the roof.
Well, test me then.
Well, we have tested you. Frankly, your GSR sucked. No one even broke a sweat.
Hi, people.
Hi, Bambi.
Hey, just cut your promo. That was so cool. Can't wait to go make those macaroni mirrors.
You're in awfully early, aren't you?
Larry found some woman who used to date the Trailside Killer. Clever man. So I got to do an interview. You know how it is.
Right.
Will you at least think about it?
I believe I already have.
Laura Linney, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you so much.
How has your character, Marianne Singleton, changed from the first episodes of Tales of the City to the current episodes?
Well, she's changed a lot, which is one of the great, you know, experiences of playing a role over such a long period of time. As many people know, Tales of the City, it was the first of six novels, and Further Tales, which is what's going to be airing in May on Showtime, is the third of those six. We did the second, More Tales of the City, a few years ago, also on Showtime. But Marianne, at the beginning of the story, the sort of canon, if that's sort of what a lot of people call it, of Tales, is a very naive young girl who's from Cleveland and makes her way to San Francisco to start a new life. And she arrives there in 1976 at the boom of what was then in San Francisco a very liberated time. And she finds herself in a world that she never expected. And it takes her a while to get her feet on the ground. She's very naive, easily embarrassed, gullible. And then in the second novel, she realizes that she can be comfortable there and starts to really enjoy it and, most importantly, enjoy herself. And then in the third novel, it goes one step further. She's more confident. She has a job that she's ambitious to improve upon. So the changes are radical. And for an actress to be able to continue a role over, what is it, almost 8 years now, is a rare opportunity, and it's been great fun.
I want to ask you about You Can Count on Me. You were nominated for Academy Award for Best Actress for your role in this. The story is about two people, you and a character who plays your brother. You're both orphaned at a young age and have since headed in opposite directions. Your brother has become a wanderer, moving from town to town, state to state, and kind of irresponsible as well. You've stayed in the small town you grew up in and are a single mother, earning a living by working at the local bank as a lending officer. And although you seem like the very responsible one, you also do some pretty irresponsible things that seem inconsistent with your character. Mm-hmm. Let me play a scene from the film. In this scene, your brother Terry has just come back to town for the first time in several years. You've taken him to lunch at a nice restaurant. You're dressed in a nice skirt and blouse. Everything's well ironed. He's wearing an old T-shirt and jeans, which are fraying. Your brother is played by Mark Ruffalo.
I'm so glad to see you.
Oh, I'm glad to see you too, Sammy. So you're coming from work?
No, it's Saturday.
Yeah, no, it's just you're dressed so formally.
Oh, no. You know, I thought I'd... you know, I thought it was a special occasion, which it is, but...
Oh, it's good. No, it's good. I thought I'd get dressed up, too.
It's okay. You look fine.
Yeah, yeah, this is the haute cuisine of garments.
What?
Nothing. So, how are you?
I'm fine, Terry.
So, how's Rudy?
We're fine, Terry. How are you?
Yeah.
Where have you been lately, Terry?
No, I haven't been.
I got a postcard from you from Alaska?
Yeah, I was out there for a little while.
That was in the fall, Terry.
Yeah, no, I've been out of touch.
I was a little worried. I mean...
Yeah, I've been a lot of different places. I was down in Florida for a little while. I was doing some work in Orlando. And, man, I've been all over the place.
Well, I wish you'd just let me know you're okay.
Laura Linney, there's a lot of really incomplete sentences in this scene, much like in Real Conversation. Kenneth Lonergan, who wrote and directed the movie, has explained that he scripts in a lot of ums and ers and pauses within his screenplay. Can you talk a little bit about this scene and using the ums and the ers and the incomplete sentences and the pauses?
Sure. This scene, originally, Kenny wrote this particular scene, I think, 10 years ago as a one-act play. So it was really the genesis of the entire story. And then as the years went by, he just expanded it, and it became the screenplay for You Can Count on Me. And Kenny's style with dialogue is extremely specific. It is littered with ums and ers and I mean and well and I don't know and stutters and stops and stop gaps and all of that, which... Once you learn it and sort of the rhythm of it gets into your body is very liberating, but it's hard to conquer at first, and was difficult for me in the beginning. And then once you get it, then it flows very easily, and it makes you better. Actually, it makes the character more complete. The rhythm of the scene moves the way that it's designed to, and that's the mark of a really great writer, is that they're also an architect. And each scene is structured and written in a lyric way so that it flows almost like a great piece of music. So all those ums and ers and all those frustrating little noises that we stammered and started through were very important.
Laura Linney is my guest, and she's starring in Further Tales of the City, the Armistead Maupin stories. Further Tales premieres this Sunday on Showtime. Now, your father is the playwright Romulus Linney. Although your parents divorced when you were young, I think you spent a fair amount of time with him when you were young?
Yes. Not an enormous amount, but certainly an important amount of time, and time that certainly bonded us deeply.
Did he take you to the theater a lot?
Yes, he did. And it was, you know, one of the great things about growing up in Manhattan, while no, you don't have the, you know, backyards and trees and carpools and all of that, what you do have is the theater and museums and movies. And I was, my parents were wonderful in exposing me to all of that and really taking advantages of the resources that Manhattan has to offer. And I used to tag along with my father a lot to rehearsals and of productions of his own things, and also would go to the theater a great deal and loved it, just loved it.
Now, this might be faulty memory, because I think the first time I interviewed your father, it was back in the late 70s, and he had a play in Philadelphia that had snakes in the title.
Yes, Holy Ghost.
Holy Ghost, yeah. And
yes.
If my
yes.
memory serves, which it might not, it had to do with a snake-handling religion and...
Pentecostal snake handlers, yes.
Good, and he had some kind of family connection with that, or at least geographical connection to it from his youth.
Well, our family's from the South, and you know, throughout the South there always were Pentecostal snake handlers around. And I think, you know, deep religion, which is, you know, an extremely passionate thing to experience for those who do, I think fascinated my father, and faith and belief and distrust and trust. And I think those are all issues that are important to him. So, and I love that play. That's actually one of my favorites, and probably the one that I've seen the most. It's probably one of the ones I know the best.
I'm figuring that you were probably exposed to a lot of theater people when you were growing up, and a lot of theater people lead, you know, reasonably unconventional lives. I'm wondering if anything you were exposed to as a child in the lives of your parents, friends, seemed disturbing or seemed particularly appealing and exciting because they were so unconventional. Or maybe it all just seemed normal to you.
Well, I grew up with my mother and would visit my father on weekends. And when I would visit him, there would be artists who would come around for dinner or for drinks or cocktail hours they had in those days. And I just remember, you know, sort of wonderful earrings, women wearing huge, big, jangly earrings and fantastic. Carolyn Kaiser, I remember, came over with a fantastic belt. And I'll never forget the belt.
She's a great poet and translator.
She's a great poet. And so there were more literary people around than actual theater people. Not a lot of, a few actors and actresses every once in a while, but primarily more artists and poets. My father was at the McDowell Colony in Yaddo, which are artist colonies, excuse me. And he would spend many summers there, so friends who he would meet there would come to visit. But so it wasn't a deluge of artistic characters that I was around, though I would have loved to have been. But when I did meet them, I loved them. They were open and kind and interested in me, you know, which not all adults are, interested in a small child. And so I loved it.
Laura Linney is my guest, and she's now starring in Further Tales of the City, based on the Armistead Maupin novel. It premieres Sunday on Showtime. She got an Academy Award nomination for her role in You Can Count on Me. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Actress Laura Linney is my guest, and she's starring in Further Tales of the City, based on the Armistead Maupin novel, and it premieres Sunday on Showtime. She got an Academy Award nomination for her starring role in You Can Count on Me. Although you sound so comfortable and always have been so comfortable in the theater world, I also read that you had a stage fright when you were young. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah, I went through a period of time. I went to Juilliard for graduate school. Mm-hmm. My third year there, I had a terrible bout of stage fright. And it was the first time in my life where I was uncomfortable in the theater. And it was heartbreaking to all of a sudden not feel at home when you were home. was very hard. And I contemplated stopping for a while and leaving school, but was able to work through it. But it was a really horrible phase, just enormous anxiety. You know, I'd walk off stage and burst into tears and it was awful, and it was humiliating as well. And I was just acutely self-conscious and horribly uncomfortable. But fortunately, I worked through it, and I've actually spoken with a lot of other actors who have been through a similar thing. But it was certainly gut-wrenching, that's for sure. Well, I bought a lot of antacid during that period of time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there's any other medication or exercise that helped you through the period.
You know, antacid. You know, and, you know, I had twitches and acne, and, you know, all of us at Juilliard would go through phases of huge stress, and, you know, strange things would happen. But I had a professor who, John Sticks, who's a terrific teacher, and he had heard that I was really struggling. Everyone knew I was struggling. It was not a secret. And he pulled me aside to his office and said, "So, you know, what's all this about?" And I said, "You know, John, I just don't know what to do. And I'm just having real doubts about myself and thinking maybe I should stop and maybe I, you know, shouldn't continue at school." And you know, he said, "Don't be silly." He said, "You know, this is where you're supposed to fail. This is where it's safe to fail, and you should fail here." And that was helpful to hear. And he was right. You know, it's good to be bad at times. And that's been a lesson that I've really taken with me.
And I think your first Broadway role was as an understudy in Six mm-hmm. Degrees of Separation as the Stockard Channing daughter character, the daughter of the Stockard Channing character. Is that right?
That is right. My first job.
First job.
It was pretty damn good for a first job.
But it always seems like an understudy is both a job and not a job at the same time, because...
Oh, no, it's very much a job. It's a very specific skill, and it's very difficult. And I was, you know, the happiest understudy going. I was so thrilled to be a part of that group, to be a part of that group of people, to be associated with that play, to work at Lincoln Center, which was right across the street from school. I was happy as happy can be. But being an understudy is really difficult. It's a whole different skill. And I have tremendous respect and a huge gratitude for people who stand by or who understudy, because it's difficult and, you know, terrifying.
What's the most difficult and terrifying parts of it?
Going on. I mean, actually going on. Because no matter how much you prepare, you usually don't rehearse with the company. You've never been in the costume. You've never felt the lights on you. You've rehearsed separately during the day with your fellow understudies on a stage with no lights, and you're wearing your jeans or whatever. So when you actually do go on, it's terrifying. It's a real leap of faith and takes enormous courage. And the people who are really good at it, those who understudy those big, huge parts, I just don't know how they do it. I made my off-Broadway and my Broadway debut understudying in that show when I went on. And the first time I went on, I had been studying the play for over a year at this point. I completely went up. I stood up to say my one line, and, you know, two-thirds into the play, and I was like a deer in headlights. A light hit me in the eye that I had never felt before, and I had no idea where I was or who I was or what I was doing. All I knew was that there I was making my Broadway debut, and I didn't know what to say. So,
how'd you get out of that?
The other actor saved me. It was John Cameron Mitchell. God bless him. He just jumped right in and saved me. But
what did he do to save
you? Terrible. He just kept the scene going. You know, he just sort of jumped in and continued the dialogue so that it made sense. But I will never forget that. It was horrible. I felt about 2 inches tall. I was so embarrassed. I felt like I'd let everybody down. but it's just one of those things that happens.
Well, what would you do every night when the play was being performed on the nights that you weren't in it? Would you mouth your lines
I'd go up and sit in the catwalk, which is the gridding system above the audience and the stage where they hang the lights. I'd go and sit up there. And because I had been, worked technically in the theater when I was doing summer stock in New Hampshire, I was comfortable up there. I knew how to walk around those spaces and not be uncomfortable. I knew what the lights were, and I knew how to be safe up there. So I would crawl up in the catwalk and watch. And just, I never grew tired of watching that play. There's a monologue that John Cunningham, who's the male lead, who's in it. And I would just every night wait for that monologue because I thought it was so beautiful, talking about a Kandinsky painting and how artists can work so hard and can overwork a great piece of art to the point where they lose what in the monologue says, you lose the painting because you work so hard, you have this magnificent thing, and then you push it too far and you don't know when to stop and let go, and you overwork it and it sort of falls apart. And I always thought it was such a beautiful, beautiful monologue.
Now, you were nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress for You Can Count on Me. So you had to, you know, get the beautiful dress and go to the designer.
Yes.
And then have clips of you on the Joan Rivers and Melissa show. Mm-hmm. of you in that beautiful dress. Mm-hmm. Just, I'm curious what that process is like, to know that you have to go to a designer and choose the dress and everyone's going to talk about it. And you might get really dished and you might get really praised. Mm-hmm. And it'll all die out soon. But for a while, mm-hmm. It's going to make news. What you wore is going to make news.
Your fair game.
Exactly.
Yes, fair game. And, you know, it's now the fashion end of all of the award season. It is now a very important part of it. It's certainly not first and foremost on my mind. But the reality is that you are fair game out there. And I'm learning to enjoy it more, which I think is the most important thing. But I decided early on that this nomination meant a lot to me, and I was determined just to have a good time.
And how did you decide who to take with you?
I took Armistead Maupin with me.
Oh, did you? Oh, good.
I did. Armistead was my date.
I'll mention he does Further Tales of the City, which you're about to star in on Showtime. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
And Armistead and I have been friends since 1993 when we did the first Tales together, and I wanted to take someone who was a permanent person in my life. I wanted to share the evening with someone who, A, I knew would have a good time, B, would also not be overwhelmed by the evening, because it is overwhelming, all of the press, and being the date of a nominee is not easy. It's sort of a job within itself. You have to make sure the train is okay, and they're sort of there for you for support as well as their own enjoyment. So I wanted to take someone who I knew would be in my life, you know, for the rest of my life, and who I could share it with. So I wanted to make sure that it was a very, very, you know, a special person. Armistead was the perfect choice. And what I did throughout the award season was I took a special friend or someone who had done an enormous amount for me over time to each different event.
Was it good to take a gay friend, because that way there's not going to be rumors in the press about this affair that you're having?
Oh, that's right. Me and my many affairs. yes, I'm recently divorced as well, so I took a lot of gay men to many of the events. Actually, me and my gay friends, and we had a wonderful time. You know, when in doubt, take a gay friend.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I want to thank you so
much.
Thank
you. My pleasure. Nice speaking with you, too.
Laura Linney stars in the new miniseries Further Tales of the City, based on the Armistead Maupin novel. It premieres Sunday night on Showtime. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.